Good day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson. As always, thanks for tuning in. So there's a lot of pessimism around about our climate crisis. We all know, or we all should know, that the Earth is heating up, but there are a lot of people who are skeptical that policies are going to be passed fast enough to usher in a carbonless future or even pull back on the amount of carbon we put into the atmosphere, which is what's causing the planet to heat. And that's led some people to think about becoming minimalists, to advocate that we need to be using less energy, cutting down on our total energy consumption in every way that we can. And while there are good reasons for these ideas to be surfaced and to push them, there are other people who are pushing for a techno-optimist future, a place where we can have our cake and eat it too. These advocates are dreaming of a place where we can continue to produce and consume energy at really high rates, but with cool and interesting carbon zero technologies, that we can live in homes and buildings powered by the sun or the wind, electric batteries, and other naturally occurring resources. This week is Earth Week, and to celebrate, we're going to be doing things a little different here on the show. We're doing deep dives into net zero carbon technologies that could be our future for everyone, everywhere here in America. Those technologies would bring about a place where we don't have to do more with less, but where we can indulge in cool carbonless materials that look slick and bring down our carbon footprint. We want to kick off the week with Charlotte Jamieson, who is Chief Policy Officer for the Michigan Environmental Council. She's here to discuss the current and future state of solar power in Michigan. Solar power is one of these really cool, slick technologies that could maintain our current energy footprint, but really greatly reduce the carbon output from it. Charlotte, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So let's start here. Did I overstate, perhaps, the potential for solar energy in my open there? Am I too excited about what could happen? The idea that we could have the sun produce as much energy as we need right now and cut down on the carbon footprint that is heating the Earth.
No, I don't think you overstated. You know, we barely scratched the surface here in Michigan on our solar potential, and there's just a huge amount of room to go that we could really be taking advantage of in terms of investing in utility scale solar, the large arrays, and also rooftop solar, community solar, all different forms of solar. That being said, though, I will say that solar is a piece of the puzzle, right? It's not gonna be the silver bullet that decarbonizes our economy. It's a very important piece of the puzzle, but it is just one piece in addition to wind energy, batteries, energy efficiency, all of these other things that we need to electric vehicles, we need to get serious about here in Michigan.
Let's talk about how solar power actually works and why it's a clean or cleaner technology to provide energy than the things that we rely on now.
Yeah, I mean, the short version of that is that the sun activates the solar panels and produces electricity. And so there's no fuel involved. The fuel is sunlight. The longer version is that there are semiconductor wafers inside each panel. And one layer is positively charged, the other is negatively charged. And when the sunlight hits it, forms, energizes the cells and causes electrons to come loose. And then the surrounding electric field sets those loose electrons into motion, and that creates electricity. And so that's kind of the longer, more technical version. But the short version is it's clean because we're getting the power from the sun.
And what are the limitations of that, or if any? Is this something that, you know, I think a lot of people think about how many days of sunshine we have, for instance, and they think of how you store this kind of energy over a long period of time, and they think, well, it's not really going to replace the natural gas that gets pumped into my house or the electricity. What's the limitation, I guess, of solar energy?
Yeah, I mean, folks will say the sun doesn't always shine, right? And here in Michigan, we're pretty cloudy. And so people look out the window and say, wow, solar doesn't look like something we can do here. The reality is, though, that we have a lot of potential. There are a lot of sunny days in Michigan, even in the winter. And in fact, solar panels produce a little bit more in the winter because the weather is colder. We do need storage. We do need batteries, and we need to bring on more batteries to balance out that when the sun is shining and when it isn't, and to make sure that we have consistent energy supply for people. In Michigan, we're a little bit lucky in the near term because we do have the Ludington Pump Storage Facility, which is a big water battery, essentially, pump storage battery. So we've got some room where we have battery storage. We've got this pump storage system. We could be bringing on some more of these variable types of energy like wind and solar. And our utilities are, in fact, heading down that road. But we, you know, in several years later in the decade, we are going to have to get really serious about building batteries and getting people in-home battery systems, too.
I'm talking with Charlotte Jamieson, who is Chief Policy Officer of the Michigan Environmental Council. We're talking this Earth Week about technologies, interesting innovations that could help us reduce our carbon footprints, but also maybe would allow us to continue using as much energy and living the lives that we have for such a long time. In other words, having our cake and eating it too. Is that possible when you think of green energy or future environmental policy? We want to hear from you during this conversation as well. Do you use solar power on your house? That's what we're talking about right now, the potential for solar power. We would really love to hear what the process was like in getting solar panels to provide power to your home. Do you want to get solar power and maybe think it's too expensive, something that's out of reach for you? Or have you had other problems trying to get solar power to your house? Also, give us a sense of how enthusiastic you are about switching the way that you get power to your house or to your car. Are you somebody who is eager to reduce the carbon footprint that all of us create with our needs for power as a way of stopping the Earth from heating as fast or as dramatically as it is? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page and put comments there, or you can go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation. Charlotte, I want to talk about how we're doing in Michigan with solar power and how we compare to other states, I guess, in terms of how far along they are. Where do we rank?
Yeah, so in Michigan, we only generate about 0.5% of our overall energy from solar power. So we're just at the cusp of what we could be doing in the solar realm. In terms of like small, that's mostly utility scale solar, these larger arrays. In terms of smaller scale solar, the solar that you put on your roof or that businesses, you know, put on site, you know, there's probably around 12,000 customers in the state that have it. So again, very small percentage of the pie, and a lot of room for growth. In terms of where Michigan ranks compared to other states, we're sort of middle of the pack. We're 26th, according to the Solar Energy Industries Association, in terms of the amount of installed solar. Things are a little skewed because you've got states like California and Hawaii that are leaps and bounds above everybody else. And then you have some other states that are, you know, way farther behind than even Michigan. So we're sort of in that middle tier of states where we've got a lot of potential that we haven't tapped into, but we have made some progress.
Again, 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. Let's start today with Brian in Grosse Pointe. Brian, welcome to the show.
Hey, Stephen, great topic. I'm calling from Grosse Pointe. I'm actually the chair of our community engagement committee here in Grosse Pointe Park, and we are super excited actually to be hosting a town talk at the Tompkins Center at Windmill Point Park on this very topic. We are having a local home solar designer come to speak to our community and walk us through kind of the ins and outs of having solar attached to your home. We are super excited about green and renewable technologies and really excited to celebrate Earth Day this year with some information for our residents.
So tell me about solar in Grosse Pointe. Brian, are you somebody who's using solar power?
I am not yet, but I am super excited about it. And I'm actually one of the interested residents that wants to hear more. You know, it's certainly new to the community, but we are seeing more and more of it come up as the economics seem to make more sense to folks, in addition to the, you know, carbon footprint issues. And it's a really, really cool technology, having talked to the solar designer personally a few times. And, you know, there's some things that were not totally intuitive, so we're just very excited to share more information with the people.
Brian, I'm really glad you called and shared what's going on in your community around this whole idea of solar power. I want to talk just a little, Charlotte, about how this could be made easier for Brian and people in his community. There's some legislation that could make it cheaper to use solar and sell the excess energy back to the grid. Talk a little about House Bill 4236 and if it passed and was passed fully and signed by the governor, how quickly it might spread solar in Michigan.
Yeah, so Michigan right now has a cap on, essentially it translates into the number of installations of small scale rooftop solar we allow to be enrolled in our distributed generation rate and connected to the grid. This cap was put on in 2008. It's 1% of retail sales, so total utility sales. We put it on in 2008 because it was a new technology. We didn't really know sort of what the future of residential solar looked like. We wanted to be a little cautious about how it might impact the grid and impact other ratepayers. But fast forward several decades, and we have realized that solar is incredibly beneficial, especially small-scale distributed solar. It's beneficial not just to the folks who, you know, put it on their own homes and reduce their own energy bills, but it also the excess solar that goes back to the grid flows to your neighbors primarily. And so it's beneficial in terms of overall ratepayers, reducing line losses, helping your neighborhood be powered by renewables. And we've just got a better sense of the technology. And so this cap is really outdated and unnecessary. But again, it's a barrier for folks to put solar on their roofs and connect to the grid. Because once you hit a cap in a utility service territory, there's really no options for you. We have hit that cap in the Upper Peninsula where rates are incredibly high. And so folks are looking for ways to reduce their energy bills and have gone gangbusters around solar. The utility up there increased the cap voluntarily, but we hit it again. In consumers territory, we hit the cap and they voluntarily increased it to 2%. And we're on track to hit it again soon. DTE territory, we're also on track to hit the 1% in this next year, probably in the fourth quarter. So again, once we hit that cap, there's not really an option for people to put solar on and be grid connected and receive a fair rate for the energy that they provide back to the grid. The House bill that you referenced would eliminate that cap entirely and would really help the solar industry have certainty over the long run that there is a market here and we're not going to arbitrarily kill that market. And that, it would allow folks to freely put solar on their properties without an arbitrary sort of limit on that access.
So what are the chances that this bill faces in the legislature?
Not great. Unfortunately, the utility companies, DT and consumers, really, really, really are opposed to small scale solar.
Yeah.
We've run up against them on a number of issues and we've found common ground on another number of issues, but their opposition to small scale solar has really caught me by surprise. I think it's a long-term business concern for them, right? The more energy that you're producing, the less you're buying from them.
Sure.
They do also maintain that there's impacts on other ratepayers. We disagree with that argument and believe that the rate that we have set for customers with solar right now accounts for the costs and benefits that those customers bring to the grid. But yes, they're incredibly powerful in Lansing and have persuaded the chair of the House Energy Committee to stall the bill out. So Representative Bellino, who's the chair of the House Energy Committee, is just sitting on that bill and not moving it because the utility companies are opposed to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I do need to mention here that just for complete transparency, we need to say that DTE financially supports WDET's coverage of environmental issues, something that we're quite grateful for, but also doesn't prevent us from talking about things where we think DTE is not embracing the kind of policy that that we think would be best for the environment. Okay, when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about solar energy and other technologies that could reduce the carbon footprint, but maybe not ask us to sacrifice much in our lives. We want to continue to hear from you on social media and on the phones. 313-577-1019 is the number here. I'd love to hear from more people who are experimenting with solar energy or other forms of carbonless energy footprint kind of technologies. Call and tell us how easy it is to do that. Call and tell us whether you have to sacrifice energy things and needs in order to do that. You can also go to social media, Facebook or Twitter, put comments there, and we'll try to include you in the show that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. Listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. It is Earth Week, and we are doing something a little different on the show as part of Earth Week, talking about technologies, in some cases really slick and cool technologies, that would help us reduce our carbon footprint, but also may not ask us to make energy sacrifices. In other words, what if you could run all the power-hungry things in your house the way you do now, but do it with the power from the sun or other forms of carbon zero technology. We're talking about the possibility of that and how we might make it easier for people to do those kind of things here in Michigan. Our guest right now is Charlotte Jamieson. She's Chief Policy Officer for the Michigan Environmental Council, which is a nonprofit advocating for environmental policies. In a little bit, we are going to talk with some folks from Highland Park about an organization that's creating a smart neighborhood to make Highland Park more sustainable and make energy more affordable for people in that city. You know, want to stay tuned to that conversation as well. Meanwhile, we want to hear from you in this conversation. Tell us about your experience with solar power or alternative forms of energy. Have you found it easy to embrace those kinds of technologies, use them in your home or in your car? Give us a sense of what that process looks like and how easy you find the trade-offs to be. Are there trade-offs? Are you maybe able to do all the things that you want to do, even though you're using an alternative energy source? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page and to Twitter and put comments there, and we can include you in the conversation that way. Michael on Twitter says, related to solar generation at the bigger level, farms, isn't the battery issue significant? It's my understanding that there isn't a battery technology yet for that, so it's not more batteries. Isn't it that we don't have battery technology at that level? Great question, Charlotte. What's the answer?
We do. We have, there are large scale lithium ion batteries. There's other other sorts of battery technology that's being developed. We do need something that's like long duration batteries, which is batteries that can hold energy for longer and siphon it off over time. And that's an area where we need more technological development. The issue, though, in the near term is cost. So we do have batteries that we could deploy at scale now that would help in terms of solar development, but they're still relatively expensive. And so trying to sort of balance out costs to ratepayers and what that means for your bill with the decarbonization that needs to happen in the power sector, those sort of cost issues become paramount. And so I think we're going to continue to see declines in costs in batteries, and we're going to continue to see advances in battery technology, just like we did with solar. And so I'm hopeful that in the next, several years, when it becomes really, really critical that we start deploying batteries at scale, that price issue and those technological hurdles will have overcome them.
Again, thanks for the comment, Michael, and the question. Big Neo on Twitter says, the limit for solar panels should be based on the size of your property, not DTE's profit margins. All homes in the U.S. should be able to have the max solar panels and zero-axis windmills, but regulations written by the power companies prevent it. Stop corporate greed. A return to this question of the role that that DTE is playing in the development of alternative energy. Let's go back to the phones here. Marty in Riley, welcome to the show.
What's going on?
Hey, how are you?
Hey, very good, very good. I just wanted to add that I think the biggest hurdle right now is the fact that Michigan got rid of net metering, so you can't properly calculate your return on investment when you're deciding whether or not to make that financial, investment in solar in your house.
That's an interesting point, Marty. I'm glad you called. Charlotte, let's first talk about what net metering is and what role it plays in this conversation.
Yeah. So retail net metering, I think, is the easiest way to sort of explain this. So retail net metering is essentially that you have solar on your house, any energy you pull off the grid, you pay the retail rate, which in Michigan is, I guess, in the DTE service territory, it's about 16, 17 cents a kilowatt hour. Any energy you use at your house is offset at, that rate. And then any energy that you provide back to the grid is compensated, you're compensated at that same retail rate. So it's really easy to calculate, as the caller was saying, and to understand sort of what your payback period is. In Michigan, again, due largely to utility opposition and concern, we moved away from that system. So we had that in place until just a few years ago. And there are folks who are grandfathered in for several years that still have retail net metering. But for everybody else, we've moved to this thing called a distributed generation tariff. And that tariff, which is essentially a rate, is set by the Public Service Commission, and it's based on the utility service territory. So the rates are slightly different in each utility service territory, which makes things a little confusing for solar companies who operate across the state. But essentially what that rate did was it reduced the credit that you get for the energy that you provide back to the grid. So in DTE service territory, instead of that 16, 17 cents a kilowatt hour, the retail rate, any excess energy that you provide back to the grid, you're now more at like 7 or 8 cents a kilowatt hour. So it's pretty significant reduction. And DTE actually just put in a new rate case at the commission, and they are asking to go even lower and to also slap a grid charge on people. So just a charge monthly for being connected to the grid. So again, really, really draconian kind of rate changes that are intended to sort of cut the economic feet out from underneath the small scale solar industry and make it pretty unappealing for anybody to put solar on their homes.
Yeah. Yeah. Summer on Twitter says, I'm curious about energy costs and environmental impacts of the manufacture of the panels and the batteries necessary to implement solar power. My understanding is this type of mining is destructive to communities and the environment. Charlotte, what's the answer to that? Is it trading off, I guess, one form of pollution and carbon footprint for another to try to create, the capacity for these solar panels?
Yeah, I mean, I think this goes back to kind of your setup at the beginning, which is, we are a consumer-based economy, and anytime we consume or produce a good, it has an impact on our environment. And the caller is right that solar is not all upside, right? There are downsides to the production and manufacture of the panels, namely the kind of resource limited materials that we need, the semiconductors that produce the wafers that are inside the panels are, incredibly energy intensive. And so there are some downsides there. That being said, though, if you look across sort of the impacts of all of our energy generation decisions, I think solar and wind have some of the least downsides. You think about coal and mountaintop mining and all the horrible sorts of things that we've done in the name of producing coal, and then we still have the emissions out the other end. And then you think about fracking and natural gas and the fact that you have emissions. So I think, there are horrible problems to each of these sorts of these sorts of energy generation. But I think solar, when stacked against the other options, really is head and tail above the rest in terms of having the least environmental negative.
Summer, thanks very much for the question on social media. Let's go to Keith in Trenton, who is back with us. Keith, welcome to the show.
Hi, Stephen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a homeowner here in Trenton, and I'm really reluctant to put solar panels on my roof in case I need to replace a roof someday or poking holes in a roof. And not getting into local building codes, but are there, can I put solar panels in my yard on a stand of some sort? What's up with that?
great question, Keith, and I love that it's a very practical question, right? If I want to do this, how do I do it in a way that doesn't compromise my home or violate local ordinances and regulations? Charlotte, what's the answer about, first, this idea of what solar panels do to your roof if you put them on? Is it easy to get them off? Do they compromise the roof in any way? But then also, what other options people might have if the roof is not the right place?
Yeah, the long story or the short story is that they don't impact your roof negatively. We've, you know, solar companies have been installing these things for a long time and have figured out really good ways of mounting these to roofs that don't compromise the structural integrity or, you know, risk kind of leaks or those sorts of things. But I totally hear the caller in terms of wanting other options, and ground mounted solar is a really great option for a lot of folks. Especially if you live in a more rural area and you have more acreage. And depending on your home, ground mounted solar might be the best option. You want to look at where the sun strikes your property the most and the longest, and that's where you want to site your solar. And so if that's on your roof, great. If that's in your, in a field, you know, in your yard, that works too. You will want to look into kind of some of the local requirements and ordinances around that. I know I live in Ann Arbor, and we have some requirements around the direction that ground-mounted solar can face, which is rather funny. But yeah, so I think it's a really good option for folks who have a large yard that's, you know, free of trees and other obstructions.
Yeah. Keith, good luck with your quest to embrace solar energy, and let us know what you end up doing. Let's go to Cindy in the Cass Corridor. Cindy, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. DTE has been against net metering for years, you know, and they also, when the solar first came out, I had to go, or I don't know if I went up there, but the only place DTE had a workshop with a contractor was at the very northern edge, almost into the next territory for Michigan Consolidated Gas, that gave 85 cents a kilowatt hour if you generated it, where DTE was giving very little, the minimum they could. But years ago, Public Lighting, Adam Mastursky, they supplied energy to Cobo Hall, all the schools, the government buildings, a lot of the residents, and they actually paid for the recreation department budget out of what they generated out of Mastursky. Mm-hmm. And we, McPherson, Kansas, we have a public utility there. They need to have go back to having public utility, public ownership of the grid and everything else, because when they're motivated by money, they're not motivated by public health.
Public interest, sure. Cindy, I really appreciate the call and the comments. Charlotte, I wonder if you have thoughts about, and we talk a lot on the show about the idea of moving back to public ownership or making energy more of a public good. It does seem to me that the embrace of solar and individual solar is a move in that direction. I mean, that's not the reason for it, but it's kind of the result, is that it becomes more of a public good. Is that a good read on that?
I think so. I mean, I think a lot of more conservative folks who get into solar, who have an interest in rooftop solar, on-site solar, do it both for economics, but also because they see it as an opportunity to sort of compete with their monopoly utility. And so I think there is that thread that runs through the interest of folks. I will say, you know, I don't have a position necessarily on the public ownership versus private ownership. I think, you know, there are a lot of municipal utilities in Michigan who are moving in the right direction on solar and have been doing some really interesting stuff like community solar projects and don't have this cap and are a little bit better when it comes to small scale solar. But they're also not great on things like energy efficiency. There are municipal utilities who are moving to end their energy efficiency program. And doing some other things that I think are not in the interest of their ratepayers and of the, you know, our effort to decarbonize. So I think, you know, there's positives and negatives with both options, but I understand why there is growing frustration with DTE and with their sort of opposition to small scale solar, which has been really strident. And I think it would behoove them to move in a better direction on small scale solar because it's just, you know, it's clear that residents in their territory want this and that it would help in terms of rates, which are very high. And reliability, which as we all know, with all the recent power outages, would be a huge boon.
Yeah. Okay. Charlotte Jamieson, Chief Policy Officer for the Michigan Environmental Council. It was really great to have you here to talk about solar energy with us. Thanks so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back, we're going to talk about a Highland Park community development project that is being powered by Carbon Zero Technologies. Really interesting experiment going on in a very needy community here in Southeast Michigan. We'll also continue to hear from you on the phones and on social media. Frank in Livonia, David in Rosedale Park. Hang on, we will get to you next as well. If you want to join them, 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.